Anthony, welcome to the Commerce Talks podcast. Today in Berlin, we just wanted to take the opportunity before our big working session to discuss the US e-commerce market. I will give you like the short summary about the European e-commerce market like in a minute. But before I'm going to do that, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name's Anthony Suhu. I am a Fortune 50 executive as well as an entrepreneur. I've done worked across digital, especially in technology, media, as well as commerce. My last role was as executive vice president at Walmart, running the home division.
Nice. So, and we were always wondering here from the German perspective. So how is it in the US when it comes to e-commerce? Because it's so Amazon dominated, like all the conversation and all like the online shops. When I had to summarize the e-commerce development in Europe, usually we are starting with, okay, initially, like all the mail order retailers try to move their old mail order business into like an online shop, but they still believe they are relevant as an mail order retailer. So pushing for the brand to mm-hmm. come to us, and then you will find the best assortment for furniture or for fridges or, mm-hmm. Or whatever. And this, they were kind of replaced by specialized online shop that did the whole like SEO, SEA game much better than their competition. For example, Zalando started as a fashion online retailer in 2008. And this like moved the whole game away from being the best brand into like, okay, we should have like the biggest assortment and a good availability mm-hmm. in our stores. And then we might have a good chance to get the customer when he's searching on Google in this moment, with an advertising. And then Amazon became bigger and bigger and bigger in Germany. And now it's, I think, controlling 50% of the e-commerce market. Mm-hmm. And, we have some specialists like Zalando for fashion, Thomann for audio. So some specialists are still there that are really controlling their respective category. But this is kind of the last 15 years e-commerce development. Very few made money. So where like before e-commerce, all the old retailers really earned, like the huge ones, like just earned tons of money. Like in the new world, it was hard for all of them like to earn money and to make a buck in e-commerce because mm-hmm. it was like it's such a fast and global competition. And then we were always wondering, okay, how did it go last 20 years in the US? So was it like the same pressure because we don't see a Zalando there, we don't see a Thomann there? So some of the older traditional retailers just like set up an online shop, but it's kind of a super Amazon dominated industry. So am I too pessimistic here?
Well, I would say in the US, certainly Amazon is the leader in e-com. And I think that that's been driven really over the last 28 years since they've existed. And the reason right now I see them continue to dominate is that if you have heard that term, if you search something on Google, if you don't find it, it doesn't exist. Well, yeah, I think in commerce, it's the same thing for commerce because, if a consumer starts thinking about an item that they want to purchase, over 50% of all queries for products start on Amazon. And so as a result, since they own that search box and they are actually bigger in search than Google, they dominate that market while other retailers kind of fight for the remaining share. And they have to then, there's a lot of competition for those keywords on Google, Instagram, Facebook, wherever else you want to kind of look for those items. So, what I see in the US market is that Amazon has really done an amazing job of really taking over that frame of consciousness when consumers are looking to shop. First, they go to Amazon first, and that's been their big moat. The other thing that's been amazing about what that company's done is they've taken things that have been their big cost centers and turned them into profit centers. And you've seen that what they've done with their advertising-based business as well as the marketplace. And you can make a case AWS is also that way as well. And if you look out at the next wave of where technology is going, obviously we've discussed, especially with AI, it really is dependent on how great your data set is. And, you know, they've been collecting a lot of, I would say, very strong structured data, but a lot of stuff with generative value, you need unstructured data. And I think that they are probably the leader in terms of capturing all that because not just consumer behavior, but they've captured a lot of data among how their whole supply chain works. Now, I think that, and we can go into this a little bit more, they don't have direct relationships with all the direct makers of these items, and hence where I think there's going to be an opportunity and maybe potentially where the weakness is.
Yeah. So when you go like shopping for fashion in the US, and I guess you don't have time to like drive to, there's no, not so much inner cities in the US. So here, like in Europe, people would say I would go to the inner city of Berlin and try to find some boutique. In the US, is usually a mall. But if you don't have time to go to a mall, if you shop fashion online, do you use Amazon? Because most people in Germany would say Zalando, About You, maybe ASOS, some international stores. Yes, Amazon has like a huge fashion online share too for basic items. Mm-hmm. But people would not claim that they use this as their main fashion destination.
I don't think people start shopping on Amazon first for fashion. What they do is they shop and look at a place like Lululemon, or one of the other, let's just say D2C sites. And then what they will then do is then do the price comparison on Amazon. And Amazon typically has had much more, products that I would say are more similar to, but not necessarily the identical items. And sometimes it's a good.
So I want to have this Lululemon shirt, but maybe without the Lululemon price tag and sticker on it.
Yeah. Or you, you know, you want to buy a pair of a Golden Goose, but you don't want to pay $500 for it, and you might be able to find a pair for $50.
Oh, okay. Got it. But so from my market understanding, and when we analyzed like 10 years ago, like market opportunities in the US would have been, there must be like a specialized multi-brand retailer for fashion, maybe even like a specialized multi-retailer for some consumer electronic device, because what you definitely see on Amazon and other global platforms, they do have a huge problem like in assortment management. So they cannot guide you finding the best smartphone, the best camera, the best sports shoe, whatever. So there's definitely a reason for multi-brand retailers in specific niches to exist. But when I just looked up the biggest e-commerce destinations sites in the US, you see like the traditional retailer names like Kroger's, Target, Walmart, and obviously Amazon dominating the market. Why is it? Is there like an explanation for this? It's like,
It comes down to kind of assortment and how they're managed in the US, and I can't speak about Europe as much, but what I will say is that while brands like Amazon and other retailers might carry some of these big brands like Nike, they certainly don't get their cream of the crop, top of their line assortment. Uh-huh. And so what you will find is the most common things that have been sold like two seasons, three seasons ago, or the most popular SKUs might show up on Amazon, the ones that are below a certain threshold. But the things that drive traffic are held off by the traditional brands, so that they're trying to drive their traffic to Lululemon, or they're trying to drive their traffic to Nike.com. And I think that that's kind of held back the idea of the super mall that you're talking about for fashion or apparel. Because if you're looking for it, the nature of apparel is you want to find the latest stuff. And there isn't one place you can find the latest stuff that has everything.
In the US.
In the US.
Okay, interesting. And maybe let's take a moment from with the D2C phenomena. So D2C brands had like a hard time to scale because like the market is too small. So like to reach like, let's say, like 100 million in revenue, that would justify your investment in an online shop, own logistics, warehouse, whatever, was hard to reach. Mm-hmm. It really came up with the rise of Facebook and like with the ability to really reach your certain customers in communities. Would you say like D2C brands in the US have like an easier time to reach customers, or is it equivalently expensive for them to reach customers?
I think it's easy to reach customers in the US because the marketing channels are so efficient. That being said, because of you, whoever you want to reach and demo, you can find that customer.
Yeah.
The tough thing is making the economics work where you can drive the second purchase. I think that there are so many different choices in the US that when a consumer is looking, they might buy the first purchase based on the item exactly fits what their needs are, as well as the fact that they saw an interesting ad. And then the next time you go back, you're being attracted by a new ad, and people can't remember where they shopped or where they made the purchase. I akin, you know, compare it. It's more akin to when you look at streaming right now, and you look at one of these things like YouTube TV, and there's 500 channels. when you watch a show, you can't actually remember which channel that came from.
Yes,
was a show
true.
On?
Yeah.
Was it on NBC? Was it on FX? Was it on Fox? I think you're seeing the same thing when in these super malls sometimes, phenomenon. People remember they bought it from Amazon. That's all they need to remember because Amazon is basically their TV.
Yeah. Yeah. And same for me. So it's like Amazon is my like private ERP system, I usually say, because then I get to see, because I'm ordering like so much, like for the family and for the firm, that I can see, okay, what was ordered last week? Where's like, what's like the status? So where is it? Can I send it back? And like for other items, usually I have to figure out, okay, I've ordered this specific item at, I don't know, 123shop.com. How does the return process work? So do I have login data for the shop somehow? So it's, yeah, definitely it's like a winner takes the most, phenomena. But this wasn't always the case, in the first years of e-commerce. And what we saw here in Europe, almost, in every country with every older retailer was like, 10 years lasting discussion about omnichannel and multichannel. It was multichannel first and then it moved to omnichannel. I don't know why they needed like another word, saying, okay, this must be like the winning model because, we are offering the advantages from old channels. So my conclusion was they're just like hoarding the disadvantages and the cost of all channels, but never came to present the advantages. So was it a similar discussion in the US or was it different?
No, I think that there were some similar discussions. I think that the idea of is that, look, you have one customer. They shop at your stores or they shop online. If it doesn't matter, they want to have one relationship with a brand. I think the challenge that we've seen in the U.S. is that because the traditional retailers have had so many different systems that they've built over the years, their customers still look to the retailer like they're two different customers because the systems aren't completely integrated. And in general, there's also some retailers that I can say in the U.S. that where they have different teams, even though they call themselves an omnichannel retailer, where the customer file for online is different from the store side. So inside the company, they think of that customer differently. And so that's not really doesn't play that well.
Is it still the case?
It's still the case with some retailers, yes. Just because I think merging some of those customer files has proven more challenging than they thought. Then I think the biggest challenge might be unlocking and undoing and trying to integrate, in a seamless way, the supply chain, because, people don't realize this, but when you bring items into the States, there's obviously a different distribution network to bring your items to a store versus, let's just say, putting your items and shipping it directly to consumers. There's, in fact, something's called a distribution center, and there's a difference between a distribution center and something called fulfillment center. Fulfillment center is centered around shipping directly to a customer versus a distribution center is really much more optimized to distribute large pallets of items to your store. And so as a result, since those things are different, you really have to work hard with, your suppliers to make sure they ship the right items to the right places. Ideally, there's no distinguishment between how you fulfill to a store and online, and that's going to help make things a lot more seamless and easy.
But you worked for a couple of retailers, and I'm pretty sure you're close to some of your peers at the other retailers. Is this kind of omnichannel discussion, is it still live? So is it still, people still believe that like providing the best experience on all channel is a winning model? Where I believe there are categories where this is true, like DIY, for example, because like there's lots of stuff on DIY, which is very hard to ship, and where you need like the customer picking it up. Otherwise it just doesn't make sense. And you don't have enough staff to fulfill like pallets of cement and wood, like putting on trailers to your house. So people must come, but most of the items you shop are shippable. Like you can pack them in a box and send them to you. Whenever this is the case, I would say omnichannel is dead. So I have this kind of extreme view because this is kind of helping me like guiding them towards e-commerce. But I believe that for many retailers, this discussion is kind of dead in Europe. Is it still alive in the US? Or do they believe in other channels? Like we talked before the podcast about live shopping and TV shopping, though there might be other channels they want to move to.
Yeah, I mean, live shopping or what we talked about is it's just part of e-com, I think, in a lot of people's minds. What I would say is that, and I can't speak for the former places where I used to work, but what I will say is that of all the traditional retailers that I've talked to, omnichannel in their mind is still alive and well because they actually do need to integrate those channels together. Now, I think the big challenge is finding efficiency in those channels for them because, you know, they, if you look at it, it's easy to try to present a front face to your customer, but the other parts of it is for, you know, the 10, 20 retailers, big retailers I can think of, they actually need to redesign their whole supply chain to optimize it. And it comes down to not just how you source the product, but how the item is packaged. Yeah. Because the item that you put on the shelf actually looks different than what you ship directly to a consumer for cost reasons as well as breakage. So something you put on a shelf might not necessarily make it to a customer's store to home. That's why I think the promise of local delivery, especially with groceries, is such a big deal right now for a lot of retailers.
Yeah. Let's save the grocery delivery discussion like for a bit later here in the podcast. Like, let's maybe stick with the journey, transformational journey of the mail order or more retailers. Because like when they, and there's like part three in their journey when they realized omnichannel is maybe not like a universal help. They moved into, okay, let's become a marketplace because why is Amazon winning? They have more products, but they don't need to pay for all the inventory because all the marketplace sellers are holding the inventory and just ship via Amazon and not in some cases, not even ship or fulfill via Amazon, but ship from their own warehouses. So we also want to become like a marketplace and then we are winning again because on top of the marketplace, we still have omnichannel. That's kind of the discussion we saw. That's what I saw. None of them have, especially in Europe, none of them have put it off or it takes them super, super long to become a marketplace because moving away from this kind of mindset, we have to control the assortment and the quality and we control what the customer is seeing in a certain category into, okay, let's everybody invite to use our landing page. It seems to be something which is almost like unbearable for procurement departments. But it's like, how have you seen this in the US?
I think there's a lot of marketplace proliferation. I mean, you see it from Target, you see it from Macy's, you see it from every retailer, including very niche retailers. Everyone's trying to kind of create marketplace. And I think that, if you were a seller of items, you would be more than happy to put it in multiple retail locations because it's free distribution.
Yes.
But I think the area of efficiency will be where do you want to store it to get it fulfilled? And if you are actually selling, let's just say on a Target or a Dick's or somewhere, a Dick's Sporting Goods or Best Buy, and you get it fulfilled, your customer might still see it in an Amazon box just because they're using it for – they might still be using Amazon Fulfillment Services or FBA, so it's still free marketing for Amazon.
Yeah, so and that's what I'm also challenging in the discussions because some of the marketplace vendors, software vendors, are claiming, okay, install our marketplace. We bring you like 10,000 vendors, 10,000 merchants within our database, so you can immediately expand your category in max, like from 10 max into like 1,000 max. Mm-hmm. And I say, okay, that doesn't make sense at all because successful marketplaces usually are successful because they somehow like create an exclusive assortment because they are the ones where the merchants are selling like exclusively to. That's why customers are coming like and adding this same 1,000 merchants, which are kind of desperate because obviously they don't make enough revenue on Amazon. So it's like you'd rather get like the bad merchants. That's kind of a desperate move. It just not adds up. I think it looks good on the slide at Macy's. So saying, okay, we are becoming marketplace. We just added like 2,000 or 10,000 new merchants, but I don't see how the math is working in the future. And especially with the effect you have described, if it then comes in an Amazon box, because Macy's obviously doesn't have the money to build this kind of fulfillment center network, where is it going?
Well, I think that there's two fronts. The way to look at it, if you were a marketplace seller, even if you are dominant and you do 99% of your business on Amazon, you probably want to diversify. And so from your standpoint, whatever other marketplaces you put on, you're hoping you just get upside in there and probably not cannibalize some, your items on Amazon. That's what you hope for. I think if you are a retailer, what you're really hoping for, if you're not Amazon and you have this one of these marketplaces, is they weren't going to buy other items. So since they're on our site, if we can just improve conversion a little bit, maybe it makes sense for us. I would say that it hasn't changed the consumer behavior though. From what I've been able to see in the data, because consumers are still, when they're searching, the search numbers don't indicate that Amazon's share is dropping. And I think in my mind, that's one of the biggest indicators of, are customers looking elsewhere to shop for the items that they're looking for? Because the search numbers continue to grow on Amazon right now in terms of queries, especially even against Google. So it's indicating to me two things that's happening. One is that Amazon's still top of mind for commerce. And then the second thing that speaks to me is that there's going to be less and less inventory when customers are searching to buy on Google and elsewhere, which is going to drive up those rates, which makes the economics of marketing much more challenging for if you're a traditional retailer. If you're a marketplace seller, it's great because you pay your 13-15%. It's based on performance. If you don't sell anything, you don't pay. So you have all the upside.
I give you like one counter argument against your proposal of like try to get other marketplace channels and not to rely on Amazon. Like 10 years ago, we founded a company that was called Factor A, and it became the biggest Amazon SEO agency in Europe.
Yeah.
So, and we had like hundreds of brands working with us, and we helped them like to sell more successful Amazon. And we had a couple of like D2C brands like that became big on Amazon. And then we always discussed with them, okay, you need to differentiate, you need to build your own direct to consumer channel. And I remember like one conversation which became rather popular in our industry, where Jörg was telling me, Alex, that's like, on theory it's good, but you know, every sale I'm not making on Amazon, I increase the risk that my rank is dropping. So I have to dominate my category for my max, or I think back at the time it was about iPhone covers. So every direct to consumer sale on my online shop is costing me double. My fulfillment costs are usually higher than 15%, and I cannot use this sale to drive my rankings on Amazon. So, and this was, we really need to focus on this one channel, which you can control. And yes, so there might be like, so we need to innovate on the product, which might be harder now with even more Chinese companies coming in. But this, like, there was a huge motion into, okay, control one channel the best you can, like, and ride this kind of force or wave. I don't know what the expression is in English. Mm-hmm. As long as you can, but don't differentiate, because differentiation means that you're losing competitive advantage over your main channels. Agree or disagree? Or agree to disagree?
I disagree with that assertion for two reasons. One is that very first thing is that you're making I think the argument, you have to believe that if you're selling another platform, the same customer would have bought from Amazon. That might be true might not be. But there's a reason they might have been shopping on that other site to begin with. Yeah. The second part of that is that it's been proven across any of these platforms that if you are a content provider, and you could say as a marketplace seller is a content provider, you want to avoid being held hostage or being stuck with one platform.
Yeah.
You saw it with gaming in the early days. If you remember Zynga, made 99% of their revenue came from Facebook. And when Facebook changed their mind, they were screwed. We saw a lot of that with Twitter as well, when people started going on Twitter and Twitter changed their algos about how they were going to rank their app marketplace. And right now, I think that it's going to play itself out when Amazon changes an algorithm, even no matter how the example you use, when they change their algos, it will affect rankings and products in their algo, depending on what they decide to do. So I think it's just too risky if I was a marketplace seller to be dependent on one channel, because it's proven that people change policies. No one stays in the same company forever. And when those things change, you can really be hurt.
Okay. I will discuss this with Jörg, who went out of business actually eventually. But okay. But then let's discuss like the fifth wave, like in e-commerce, because like when the companies like the Kroger's or Macy's realized, okay, we have to become a marketplace, but try to do it the cheap way, it's not working. We have discussed already. Then the next thing they realize is that out of the marketplace business, like the retail process itself, it's very hard to get any margin out. So I have to move into like retail media, services, financing business, because if you look at the Amazon numbers, retail is actually a loss business. Retail media, Amazon marketing is like a huge business. Logistics is a huge business. And you're seeing it even now with the newest IPO from Instacart, that they're not making any money on the deliveries of groceries to the households, but like every order is like subsidized by retail media money. So in this kind of move, okay, dear procurement department for furniture, good job last 20 years. You find good furniture, good manufacturers, and we had a margin and we could make some money. It's like, this seems to be dead for almost every category because like the margin is squeezed to a level where it's hard like to even get to like the, to net zero. And the only way to earn some money on top is like retail media to get money from the manufacturer on top. Okay. If you want to successfully sell your furniture or your mugs on my platform, give me some money so I can, put a banner on the mug section on my website. And it's 100% mind shift change because the whole driver of profitability last 50 years for those retailers was like the people buying the product and deciding like what is our markup to the end customers. Like this seems to be even harder than the first steps, like into e-commerce and into marketplace. And now realizing that you don't earn money by your core processes anymore just seems to be unbearable for many.
Two things I kind of want to call out here is that I think as everyone starts sharing the same kind of playbook that everyone's, either going to put their items on a marketplace or if you're a retailer, you're going to set up your marketplace. I think over time, what you see is efficiencies start converging into one. And then the people that have the biggest scale, will win out there. The second thing maybe I would kind of call out is that there are certain categories where it feels a little bit more commodity. I think consumer products seems like that the lowest price typically wins for a brand. But there are categories like apparel, like beauty, like home, where actually price is an indicator of quality. So if you have the lowest price, it might not necessarily mean that you're going to win in those markets, because if you have priced the item a little too cheap, what will indicate is it's a clear indicator of the quality of those items, where the consumer is actually more concerned because those items they can't touch or feel it. And so the price indicates the quality of those items. That being said, you want to offer great value within a price band. And I think that there still might be some opportunities for those brands to maybe play directly on their site or find a new platform where they could be helpful.
Okay. This leads me like to the next challenge.
Yeah.
Which means like brands are almost dead, especially if you go to the big online.
Boy, platform. You're negative today.
If you, it's like, we only have 40 minutes, so we have to go step by step, like only two or three like online accusations left. if you would go like for searching, let's say watches or socks or shoes now on Amazon, first 95% of the results are no brands.
Yeah.
It's like you wouldn't like even recognize, is this a brand or it's just like, is this a typo in the text? So it's obviously very successful for no brands, because like people are not searching for, I don't know, we have like, usually use like WMF, frying pans, which is like a German famous brand for like kitchenware, and nobody's searching it on Amazon anymore. People search for frying pan young family or frying pan fish or affordable frying pan. So it's like, it gets much more like commoditized. It's the search term itself. So the brand is not in there anymore. Which is usually leveraged by obvious Asian and mostly like Chinese sellers or manufacturers. Like they create fake names or just their names, Hong Kong pants, let's say, and then put it on Amazon. Good pictures, good quality, good review management, or like this the brand itself is replaced by the review quality and the number of reviews. Mm-hmm. So 4.9 mm-hmm. stars, 5,000 reviews, you would trust Amazon because yeah. you don't need the brand anymore. And now this is even replaced, which is makes it even harder with Temu, mm-hmm. like the new marketplace, where you see, okay, I've paid for those shoes you have on, like I've paid like $30 at Amazon, and it felt like super deal. Now you see the same shoes like for $10 at Temu, like really the same shoes, same pictures, same manufacturer, and you can get them like in 10 days. It's like, poo. It's like until like 1 year ago, I said, okay, Amazon is winning the game. It's like, mm-hmm. it's really, they kind of figured it out. Everybody eventually has to sell over them and then like get their margin. But now you have like brands have a huge issue, like where to sell and like to show value on those platforms. And now even the platforms come under pressure because of new Chinese entrants, where they do make a very good job in getting all those people on their app. Okay, that's two questions in one. So what about the brands going forward on platforms? And second is, what about the new platforms coming in the market?
Well, I think there's always going to be a market for some brands because if brands have built up enough loyalty, they stand for a certain quality bar. But that being said, when you purchase items on Amazon based on the ratings and reviews, I think that and they have a really low price for some of these commodity items. It's your cost of getting it wrong as a consumer is way lower. And in fact, outside of the example that you use, like shoes for family or whatever, frying pans for family, I think what you find is sometimes customers will say, I'm looking for a Stan Smith equivalent Adidas or a Golden Goose equivalent or Golden Goose in general. I remember when Allbirds, that was one of the things during their pinnacle, they had said that if you typed in on Allbirds, they were selling their shoes for about $129 and you could find an alternative for $25. And it looked like the reviews were high. It looked almost the same, but it wasn't called Allbirds. You know, the new phenomenon with Temu and some of those others is interesting. Because what you find is that from a consumer standpoint, I didn't really know what I wanted, but the cost is so cheap right now or low that my cost of getting it wrong is very low. So I think I'm going to try it for the first time. I see people instead of buying one earring, they buy 10 because yeah. the price is so low. It's the same. Yeah. And you think one pair or two pairs of those are going to be better than the one pair you would have paid at the regular price.
You would think so, but it's super successful.
Well, I think the difference I have seen with Temu maybe versus say a Wish is that the quality of the items actually are much higher. I do think we're playing in a different time. One of the things that's happened right now versus a few years back is that if you look at China, I would just focus on China as a market in general. They have a lot of excess capacity. And as we know, factories have to operate with a huge amount of fixed costs. For equipment and real estate in their factories just to keep it running. And if you run it below a certain threshold, let's just say 85% capacity, you will lose money. So you have to keep these things running. And you know, some factories are higher or lower. I just kind of use that number as an example. But if you need to run it at capacity and there's a path for you, like with Temu, to ship directly to a consumer, and you're going to get the same as if you sold it to an importer that was going to sell it to a marketplace buyer that was going to put it on Amazon, you would do it in a heartbeat and the consumer actually wins out. There's other brands like that we're seeing. I think Quince and Apparel in the US is a big brand. They're selling $59 cashmere sweaters or something that typically I think the consumer in the past will pay $200 in the US market for. And it's because of this new sourcing model of factory to consumer.
Do you think so we just started like to think about the factory consumer thing here in Europe that like kind of like eliminates all middlemen. So not only the middlemen that did some like quality assurance and import stuff, but even like the warehouses, the distribution centers in the middle. And the more I look into it, the more it really looks to me as a true danger for retailers, brands, and all people that were involved like in the old value chain. Of e-commerce, like when out of a sudden, like a factory based on a trend, can come up with like a new color of earring, or let's say a pink frying pan, like because it's a Barbie mm-hmm. trend. Also mm-hmm. puts on a platform just a picture of it and see, okay, the demand is rising. I produce it. Mm-hmm. Then I ship it like the 2 weeks or however the trend is lasting, and I make some money because I'm just using like the last like 5% of capacity, or because I'm just good like in, I was good in predicting this trend. So first week I could have, I sold it like for $15 now, and like $9 is kind of the bare minimum. So the longer I look into that, the more I'm sweating, I have to say, because like, all the strategies we've told like brands like 10 years ago and all this kind of stuff, it's like it's immediately like collapsing. So but maybe I'm like overreacting here. But it's like, but for me it feels like the doom of like even the next era.
Well, I think what you're finding in the supply chain, and it feels very much actually to me like when you look at the auto industry in the 70s, the Japanese manufacturers of automobiles were so much more efficient than the U.S. automakers before. I think what it forced is everyone to be more efficient over time. I think that there is an inefficiency in terms of how products are sourced, and how they're brought to the U.S. and how they're sold, because the typical response time right now, you've heard, it can take from idea to sales a planning cycle of 18 months, up to 18 months for a lot of importers and retailers. And when you talk to Temu or you talk to Shein, they say they can, from idea to sell, they can do that in about 4 weeks, which is amazing. The one part of their business also that completely changes, and I always like to follow the money on the income statement and cash flow, there's two things to kind of call out that most people don't see when they're looking at it. Is one is that they have actually negative working capital, which means that they get their cash up front and then they pay the factories later. So they actually have a big float, in fact, for these services, which is great. And I think from the consumer standpoint, you know, the big issue before was that you needed to, when you made a purchase and it was going to be shipped by sea, you had to wait 8 weeks for an item to show up. How many times have we gone to Pottery Barn and you order furniture, at least in the U.S., and it takes like 6 months for it to show up? But there's a lot of items right now that they're air shipping. And so you're getting these items within a week of ordering. And I think that the value that a consumer is saving in terms of time, and the quality items is actually pretty high because it was going to be the same items you're going to buy from a brand anyway. And the savings that consumers are seeing, they're winning across all three, which is quality, price, and weight. It doesn't have Amazon Prime on 2 day yet, but you are seeing Temu airship in about 5 to 7 days, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. And what people usually don't realize, even like the good quality stuff, stuff you're wearing also comes from China. So it's not just the cheap stuff, like even the good stuff.
Well, even a lot of iPhones, right? When people think about it, it's designed in the U.S. Yeah. It's designed in Cupertino.
It's true. Manufactured, but they're coming now more and more from Vietnam, which I understand like Foxconn is moving the manufacturing.
But the factory to consumer thing is a big trend, I think, in retail that's going to play out over the next 5 to 10 years. It's not just China. It's India. It's going to be Pakistan. It's going to be everywhere. And I do think that the winners will be the consumers, because what this is doing, it's just kind of collapsing the time you have to get. The old days of minimum order quantities and making sure you buy big and then getting it stuck, that making the mistakes is gone.
So you would not invest into like a distribution center supplier right now?
I think distribution centers are required for items, no matter what you try to do, because at the local front, because there's some items like fresh and some of the others that you actually need to be closer, but there probably will be some excess capacities in some categories. And you know, some of those places or distribution centers, they were always getting good deals for those too. I could see those things sticking around.
Okay. Next time when we do like record like a second episode, we definitely have to talk about like the grocery market, because we don't have time, and we are getting a lot of like angry faces when we are showing up late at the next meeting. Anthony, thank you for your time.
Sure. Happy to be here.